are our specialty drugs? Has price pressure in the US bottomed out? Are Indian companies innovating fast enough? What are biosimilars? Are we really over US FDA issues? Will pharma stocks ever show supernormal returns? These are some of the questions the Meds in Box podcast on CNBCTV18.com aims to answer. Hi, I'm Ekta Batra. Do tune in while I chat with the top voices in the pharma and healthcare space to get answers to the most challenging questions, spot the key trends, and identify the next leg of growth in the pharma and healthcare space. Only on CNBC TV 18. Hello and welcome to the Medicine Box on CNBCTV18.com with me, your host, Ekta Batra. This podcast aims to give you an insight on all things pharma and health, from discussing trends in industry to key issues in health with all the relevant experts. And this series of the Medicine Box is focused on exactly that, health and wellness. Our guest on today's podcast is Dr. Amy Shah, who originally is from India, is now a US-based wellness and nutrition expert. Dr. Amy has medical degrees from Cornell, Albert Einstein New York, Harvard, and Columbia. Dr. Amy joins in today to discuss some of her key philosophies, such as combining East and West medicine, the concept of fasting, and the importance of your gut or stomach in your overall health. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, Amy, let's start with a bit of a brief background about yourself. Tell us about where you're coming from, what your degrees are, what got you into wellness and nutrition.
Yes, so I was born in India and immigrated to the US when I was 5 years old. At that time, Indians were not aplenty, especially where we had moved, and it was a very difficult road for my parents and I as a small child. I didn't speak English, I looked different, I had different clothes, and I didn't quite fit in. My grandmother dropped me to school every day. She had a sari and a bindi, and I get made fun of all the time. Also for the food that we ate, when my mom would pack me lunch of dal, and they would make fun of the vegetarian. Oh, you're vegetarian, why don't you have a burger, and all of these things. It really impacted me at that time. I wanted to fit in. So what I did is I shunned our Indian roots. I didn't want to bring the food. I wanted to eat pizza, and I wanted to have sandwiches, and just like all the other children. And I think that started to change my views at that time. I said, oh, you know, modern is better. Ancient traditions, they don't know anything. It was not until I was in medical school where I started to see the little holes in Western medicine. We had a group conversation about the immune system. Why is it that the immune system is going so haphazard in the modern world? Allergies, asthma, autoimmune diseases, all kinds of inflammation in the body causing diabetes, hypertension, cancer, heart disease. And one of the theories, the leading theory, was the hygiene hypothesis. As we've gotten richer, as we've gotten cleaner, more hygienic, our immune system has started to go haywire. We don't know whether it's one thing that we're eating, one thing that we're doing, but they noticed in the turn of the century in London that the children of the farms were not having these diseases, whereas the children who moved to London, the richer, cleaner families, were getting all these diseases. That was the first time I started to say, wait a second, you know, this does not make sense, and there's something wrong with the way we're living our lives, eating or doing the things. There's something wrong with it. And that's what made me start questioning and starting to look at our ancient practices. You know, turmeric has been shown now to be one of the most anti-inflammatory foods.
Which is basically haldi.
Haldi. Yeah. Our haldi has been shown one of the world's most anti-inflammatory foods that can turn this around. Living in close quarters with people, sharing food, being part of nature, has also been shown to lower these kind of diseases. So that's what made me really interested in the immune system, where gut health, immunity, and health meet, and which is why I started to specialize. After completing medical school, completing general internal medicine, I wanted to go into immunology. And that's why gut health, immunology, health, and nutrition all come together for me.
How exactly do you integrate East and West medicine in terms of your practice or in terms of your key philosophy?
So my key philosophy is to stay where Western medicine and Eastern medicine meet. There's many things we could be doing in our lives, but I think that focusing on the concepts where we know there's some evidence that it helps, and we know there's some history, ancient, traditional, religious, whatever history, and where it coincides is where I like to stay. And that's because my Western medical background informs me that sometimes we think things help, but then we find out later that that was just maybe a correlation or something. So I like to have studies that back up our claims of ancient medicine. So that's where I like to live. Now, in our the way I practice, I have two separate kind of practices. They intertwine, but my practice where I see one-on-one patients, that often means allergy, immune system, gut health problems. And then there's my wellness consults, where I focus more on modulating their diet and lifestyle and health changes.
Okay, so what is the key philosophy that you work with when it comes to, say, being healthy and having an optimum amount of health? Where does it come from? What should one do?
You should, 85% of your health is your diet and lifestyle. And I tell people that what you do outside of the doctor's office is what determines your health. It is not what you do in the office or after the office. It's what you do on every other day of the year that matters. It's the diet, it's the lifestyle. That's where intermittent fasting and eating these superfoods come in. And I can talk about that further, it's a group of foods that are not necessarily rare, but that really have a big impact on our health.
So India is primarily, you would say, has a lot of these herbs and these superfoods, which are now becoming popular. You know, the haldi that you mentioned, or the chia seeds, and ginger, and garlic, and a lot more. So what exactly is a superfood? And is a superfood hard to find, or is it just available in your kitchen?
Yeah, superfood, exactly what you're saying. Superfoods have been thought to be the secret. No, superfood does not mean secret, hard to find, expensive, foreign. It can mean, you know, greens from your garden. It can mean ginger. It can mean turmeric, haldi from the market. It is not meant to mean, in my definition, something that is foreign or hard to find or expensive. It just means that it has a power to move your health in a way that's positive. For example, we know that ancestors ate 100 grams of fiber from vegetables, vegetable matter, 100 grams, whereas most modern, 15 grams or sometimes even less a day of fiber. So our superfoods are just our greens and our vegetables. The things that have the vegetable fiber that feed our gut bacteria, that's a superfood to me. Spinach.
So how much of superfoods should you be eating? The Indian diet contains a lot of superfoods in general, you know, cooking. For example, all the herbs that you spoke about, the spinach, and it's a plant-based diet. But how much is too much, and how much do we need to integrate?
What I tell people is focus on getting 6 to 8 servings of plant fiber a day, like vegetables, basically. Mm. And, you know, the like you said, in an Indian diet, if you're eating 2 servings of haldi a day, ginger, garlic, you have already gotten your superfood quota. Really, it's based on whole foods, not eating things that are stripped of all the nutrients, like bread, for example, or cookies or crackers, baked goods. These things are stripped of all the superfoods, and all that's added back is the sugar and the very inflammatory fats.
Okay. How important are these superfoods? Because while we do talk about a lot of superfoods present in the Indian diet, we are seeing a large amount of lifestyle diseases impacting Indians now.
Yes.
So for example, it could be obesity, or it could be probably higher cholesterol levels, diabetes. Where is India going wrong from its traditional diet to now?
Well, I think we all can know that the Indian diet has changed. Right? If you think about your ancestors, maybe just even your grandparents, what they ate versus what the modern Indian eats, it's quite different. If you think about how many times sweets are incorporated into the meal, how many times you're eating processed, fiberless food, how many times you're eating foods that are packaged, this is a very recent phenomenon, maybe in the last 50 years in India, maybe last 100 years. But if you look at the ancestors, the real Indian food, the traditional meals cooked at home, it is very healthy.
But what about the no-carb diet, or you know, the paleo diet or the keto diet? You're trying to incorporate different kinds of food which might not have the same proportion of nutrients. For example, it could be lopsided towards fat and lopsided towards protein. Are all those kind of diets correct?
Let's put it this way. Anytime you switch from a very heavily processed, high sugar, high fat diet to a diet that's whole foods, home-based, you're always gonna get improvements. That's why people switch to vegan diet and they feel better because they cannot eat the food out in the restaurants and you know, bakeries. What about paleo diet? Yeah, you feel better because you're cooking at home, you're not allowed to eat so many foods. Keto, you know, anytime you shift from a processed, very sedentary life with lots of sugar and fats and you change it into a whole foods, you're gonna feel better. So that's why there's some confusion, because people say, oh, I'm doing this carnivore, there's this new diet, carnivore diet, only meat, no vegetables. And they feel better. Why? Because maybe they're not eating as much sugar, they're not eating as much grains. That's my only thought process. Keto is super popular because it lets you eat fats, but then you cut out all the breads and the sugars. So you're still changing it from a processed diet. However, I do not believe that most of these diets are one, sustainable, and two, healthy.
Why not? Expand on why not sustainable, why not healthy? I'm sure that people would get tired of eating a certain type of food.
Exactly.
Making a certain type of food, keeping these kind of restrictions. Sustainability, I understand. Not healthy?
Mm-hmm. Keto, for example, if you are eating only fats, you will run out of healthy fats very quickly. Avocados, whole coconuts, nuts, you're done. Now what do? You're still hungry. You start eating unhealthy fats to make up for, you know, you have nothing else to eat. So you're eating processed meats. You're eating, you know, all kinds of things that are very, very inflammatory. So it's not to say that you cannot do a keto diet with just healthy fats. You can if you have just avocados and coconuts and nuts. Probably those are the three healthy fats that you can say seeds. And then you run out of foods. So that's why you end up seeing people keto diet often go through drive-through in Americas. You know, they'll get a burger and just eat the patty, or they'll get bacon, or all these processed fats that are known to be very inflammatory. So what I say to people, if you want to eat keto-ish, you know, add more healthy fats to your diet, but does not mean you have to go zero carbohydrate. One, it's unsustainable, and no one, not one person can sustain the keto diet. Well, maybe there's one person, but you know what I'm saying? Less than 1% of the people. You cannot sustain that for the long term. So what you're doing is you're getting short-term success, and then basically you're gonna bounce right back to worse, even worse than where you started.
So what is the right way to eat? Is it just a balanced Indian diet for Indians, going back to their roots, eating dal chawal for lunch, eating you know, roti sabzi in the night? Is that the correct way to probably get all your nutrients?
So Ekta, there's so many correct ways. As you know, there are many correct ways. There's not one. Whenever people talk about diet, they're always arguing, this is the best. There's so many ways to get to a healthy diet. We found from population studies, many populations around the world eating diverse foods are living to 110, healthy and happy. That's what we all want. So we know, looking at centenarians, people living over 100 all over the world, that there are different things. The commonalities seem to be that they are low processed foods.
High processed, you mean store-bought foods?
Store-bought breads, cereals, cakes, cookies, things that come in packages and bags.
Okay.
Less of that and more of fiber in their diet from vegetables, plant fiber, fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh herbs and spices, nuts. Those are like the three overlapping thing: healthy fats, herbs and spices, fresh vegetables. And then after that, every culture has their own thing. Like, we know that beans and lentils in the Mediterranean diet and also in the Indian diet have been quite beneficial and have been present for thousands of years. So I always say, don't be afraid. There's diets now afraid of beans and lentils. I said, don't be afraid of that. As long as you properly prepare it, you should be having beans and lentils. Vegetables, fruits, healthy fats, which is nuts, avocado, coconut, and really staying away from sugar.
So is sugar a no-no? Because Indians, I mean, world over, people love desserts, but is it a complete no? Or maybe in proportion or in
exactly
in small amounts.
If you think about, you know, that is where I want you to think back. I was talking to my mom and I said, think back to your grandparents. And she said, oh yeah, they would have sweets on holidays, Diwali and certain religious holidays, but not every day. They didn't have a sweet after lunch and after dinner and then at night before bed. And, you know, that whole thing. And that's where fasting comes in, too. You know, when there is no electricity, we turned off, you know, we're done with dinner after sundown, and we don't eat again till well after sun up, because sun comes up, and then you start to get everything together. And so it's not well until well after sun up that most people ate. So they practice intermittent fasting for thousands of years before we had refrigerators with lights, you know, in it, mm-hmm. where we can just grab something or whatever. I honestly feel that all of these studies that are coming out on intermittent fasting are just confirming what we knew through ancient times.
So there is this concept that you can eat every 2 hours. Would you subscribe to that?
I am a complete believer that is a myth. Eating every 2 hours, what it does, it keeps your sugar high in your blood. And so if you're running all day long, you need, you know, refueling every 2 hours. When 90% of us have jobs and life and we're exercising 1 hour or less, there is no need for constant food. In fact, constant food, all it does is it triggers our insulin response, which we think is the link between disease and food.
Okay.
The insulin rising. So if you think about it, when we eat, our blood sugar rises and our insulin rises. And our body, insulin is a signal to our body to start storing, and that's why you get fat gain if you're eating a lot of food all the time. Right. Okay, but when you fast, your insulin levels go low. And in fact, your body starts to run out of sugar in the blood. And so it needs to tap into then your liver stores, your fat stores, all the stores that you want to have released sugar. And so that does not happen. That's why it's good for weight loss and metabolic disease. Then there's all these other repair mechanisms that only happen when you are fasting. So imagine that you have guests coming in to your home every 2 hours. You'll never get to deep clean the closet. You'll never get to clean up the floors. You'll never get to replace the windows because you're constantly having to feed these guests who are coming. It is not until the body signals 12 hours or so that there is fasting going on that they start to deep clean, that they start to get rid of those old organelles, that they start to replace all. You will see GI rest is the best treatment for any kind of infection, any kind of rebooting of the system. So if you want to keep your body at tip-top shape, skin and GI tract, brain, you need to be giving your body a break from this constant, you know, rotation of food.
Okay. How important is this particular diet or intermittent fasting to prevent disease, and what kind of disease? You did speak about some amount of lifestyle diseases such as higher sugar, etc. But say something as serious as cancer, mm-hmm. is it effective
yes.
in probably preventing cancer?
There was a study that looked, said, okay, we've seen it in mice, animal studies. So somebody said, let's look at humans. So they picked breast cancer survivors. They split two groups up. One group fasted 13 hours, 7 to 8 a.m., 7 p.m. to 8 a.m. The other group did not fast. They just got general nutrition guidelines, you know. Same kind of breast cancer, they found a 34% reduction in the intermittent fasting group. Same amount of food, they didn't diet, they didn't do anything different. I can tell you that 13 hours, if you told someone you just have to fast 13 hours and you can potentially reduce your chance of recurrence by over 30%, I mean, that kind of medication would be making billions of dollars if it was a medication. This is a free tool that we can be using to update and keep our bodies in the top shape. So cancer, diabetes has shown the same exact response. Hypertension, heart disease, brain disease, Alzheimer's, and dementia. And so you can say, okay, I don't have any of those in my family. Then do for weight control, for skin. You wanna look glowing? You know, give your body a chance to break. We have a clock in each one of our cells. And our clock says we are optimized to digest during the mid-waking hours. And those genes turn off during the nighttime hours. So our circadian clock is there, present in every cell in our body. So what I say, sync your body to your natural circadian clock that's already present. And that makes sense why diseases would be less, because your genetics are programmed to eat and sleep and live in certain ways, loosely.
What about exercise? How important is exercise? How much should people exercise?
Exercise has been overstated. The industry, you know, they want you to buy these supplements, they want you to buy gym memberships, they want you to do. In fact, exercise, when you look at these centenarians, 100, you know, people living to 100, they're not on a treadmill every day. They're walking. They are doing just daily activities. So, of course, in our modern lifestyle, we cannot mimic the farming or the lifestyle that they made, but we try our best. So what I say is nature walks are the number one best exercise, I say, because nature inherently is calming to the brain and to the immune system, and it is great for getting some bacteria, natural bacteria, into your system just by walking, touching, and you get your daily exercise in. It is probably the cheapest, easiest thing you can do, especially if you do it in the morning or evening. And you know, beyond that, yoga is probably the thing I recommend the most. Not that, just like I said with diet, there's not one, okay, you must do this exercise. You want to have daily movement, whatever that, if it's Tai Chi, if it's yoga, if it's walking, you need to have daily movement every day in your life, incorporate, not just, you know, 1 hour at the gym and you're done for your day and you sit for the rest of the 8 hour, you know, 10, 12 hours in front of a TV or a computer screen. That is not what I would recommend. I recommend natural daily movement. Nature is a huge plus.
And something which is integrated into your lifestyle. Yeah.
85% of this is diet. Mm-hmm. 15% is all the rest, you know, your exercise and your supplements and, you know, all that stuff. Like, I always tell people, I'm not against you taking supplements or doing all these crazy things, but that is adding maybe 5%. Mm-hmm. The real work is in your daily food and your other habits, right?
Okay. Amy, just to sum it up, just describe a day for us in terms of how somebody should wake up, what they should do to achieve the optimum health.
Achieving optimum health is energy, and focused now and disease-free and long, healthy life later. You wake up shortly after sunrise, maybe 7 to 9 o'clock, before 10 a.m., because circadian clock is almost the same in 95% of people, even though I say I'm a morning person, you're a night person, but it's 7 to 9 o'clock. You will have been fasting for 12 to 14 hours, whatever, and then you start your eating after that. So maybe you start eating at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. And you will be having lots of plant foods, so vegetables, morning, afternoon, and evening. Low sugar foods, morning, afternoon, evening. So the first meal might be, for us, it's berries, or it may, you know, strawberries are in season right now, nuts, and you might have, you know, some kind of omelet, or you might have some kind of chickpea basin flour, a pancake, okay? And then you might go to lunch and have soup or salad, and, you know, if you're at work and working desk, you might even have a smoothie in between with fruits and vegetables. And then the evening, you might have a traditional Indian meal with dal and chawal and sabjis and, you know, all the spices, and really trying to limit how much of these packaged processed foods. And then in the evening, you might treat yourself. You say, I had no sugar all day. I might treat myself to two squares of dark chocolate, or one, you know, one dry fruit, you know, a couple of pieces of dry fruit. That is fine. It's not about deprivation and, you know, painful. You should look forward to your meals. And then fasting, basically, from, you know, 7 p.m. Until the next morning. That would be the ideal.
All right, Dr. Amy, thank you very much for joining in to the Medicine Box and taking us through your key philosophies, which is basically an integration of East and West medicine in order to achieve optimum health. Thank you very much, and we hope to see you again.
Thank you, Ekta.